This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 24.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk about the popular subject of barefoot and minimalistic running. And in the quick tip segment, we have a special guest quick tipper who will tell you how to find the right level of exercise for your age and body type. And if you are a beginner and would like to conquer the marathon and build a life of health and fitness using our proven system, you can get a risk-free trial membership to MTA Member by visiting marathontrainingacademy.com. So, Angie, we've had our little Liam home now from the hospital for 3 weeks, and you haven't been sleeping very much at night, right?
Yes, that's kind of an understatement. I'm existing in a fog, I think.
So you're having to get up 3 or 4 times a night, huh? And there's really nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, it's a pretty typical night. He's up every couple hours usually.
So are you having enough energy to exercise and get out and try running at all?
Well, after a couple of weeks of, you know, reduced sleep, I decided I really needed to get back into my exercise routine just to restore some normalcy to my life and to, you know, give myself some more energy. Because whether you feel like it or not, exercise actually does give you more energy in your day. So about a week ago, I started going back to my yoga class, and I've been working on building my running base back up. And it's still at that point in time where it's kind of uncomfortable and not very fun. I'm kind of doing a 2-to-1 jog-walk ratio right now. But it still feels good to get out there and know that I'm active and doing something good for my body. So yeah, I feel like it's going pretty good for 3 weeks after having a baby.
Yeah, that's great. Have you built up to a mile running yet?
Nope, not there yet.
Okay. Well, we'll keep documenting your journey. Maybe there's some of our listeners who are building their mileage base back up after, who knows, having a baby or having an injury or...
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. I've been following Kara Goucher's blog, and she's an elite runner that most of you are familiar with her name. And she had a baby about 4 weeks ago, and I've kind of been following her journey and her progress getting back into running. Now, obviously, she's way above me in fitness and accomplishments, but it's been inspiring for me to see another woman who's going through many of the same things that I am, just getting back in shape and everything. So it's been inspiring, and hopefully some of the women out there who can relate to going through the childbirth experience and recovery can know that it is possible to get back in shape and to feel pretty good after you have a baby.
Yeah, that's good. And I got to go out and run 4 miles this morning with my dad, which is always nice. He's visiting from California, he and my mom. And I don't get to run with a partner very often, especially with my dad. So enjoy that. And I've still got my running shoes on as we're doing this podcast.
Good for you.
And I think you're going to go out as soon as we're done.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so what's been going on out there in the Marathon Training Academy community?
Well, I always enjoy keeping up with Facebook and what people post on our page. And I think we've got about 1,578 fans right now. So it's great to have each one of you. And I've got a couple shout outs from people on Facebook and also from the emails that I get. So I'd like to say hi to some people. The first one comes from Brady, and he says, Angie and Trevor, I just found your podcast and listened to 3 hours of it on a training run for my second marathon. I was only scheduled to run 16 miles, but pumped out 18.37 due to your awesome content. Thanks.
Oh, man. That's good.
This is my second marathon. My first was Nashville Country Music in 2010 when the course was shut down. When I had completed about 22 miles of the marathon, I'm sure you heard about the tornadoes that swept through. I'm off to redeem myself this December to complete my marathon. I'm training solo this time around rather than with a partner, and it's been a great experience. My running inspiration comes in the form of my mother. We both picked up running in 2009, and she is a 50-something cancer survivor who is missing most of one lung. If she can rock 4 miles a day, I can run any distance. Hope your family is healthy and happy. And that's from Brady.
That's a good way to look at it. Look at somebody who has it, you know, a little tougher than you do, that is really accomplishing some awesome things, and then just kind of give yourself a kick in the pants and say, why can't I do it if they can?
Exactly, yeah. It's important to be thankful for the healthy bodies that we have and to look at people who do overcome such great challenges and know that, you know, you can accomplish your goals too. And if you do have some sort of health challenge, you know there's other people out there just like you who are still running and accomplishing a lot and haven't given up on their goals. The next comes from Karen. She says, I've been listening to Marathon Training Academy since early June. I'm a wannabe runner of sorts, and yesterday I ran my first half marathon in Long Beach, California. Thank you so much for all the inspiration and for making the thought of a marathon seem like something mere mortals are capable of too.
That's all we are, Karen, is mere mortals.
Certainly are.
Sometimes I wonder about Angie.
No. you should see my brain as deprived. And
well, as soon as the baby starts sleeping more, your brain will get more oxygen, probably.
I'm hoping that the brain cells will start working together a little better.
Yeah.
The final note comes from Keith, and he says, Angie, I love your podcast. I believe listening to your advice helped me improve my marathon time. I'd like to give a little background of my 21-year quest to finish my first marathon. In 1989, I was in the U.S. Air Force stationed in England. I entered the lottery system to run the London Marathon. I was shocked and overwhelmed when I received a race number. I was on top of the world and training smart until I crashed on my bike on a cross-training day and separated my shoulder 1 month before the race.
Ouch.
Of course, the doctor said a big no on the race, since surgery was required to repair it. I gave up the marathon dream at that point. I couldn't get the running desire back for some reason. 20 years later, my dad had triple bypass, and I told myself I didn't want to follow that route. I started running and convinced myself to try the marathon dream again. I registered for the Rock and Roll Arizona Marathon. This time, 3 weeks prior to the race, on my final long run, I stumbled on the side of the road while running and almost crashed. My leg hurt awful afterwards, and I tore the muscle in my thigh, and the doctor said no to the race again. I knew I shouldn't do the race, but either stubbornness or determination, not sure which, completed the marathon in 5 hours and 58 minutes. Not real happy with the time, but I finished. Fast forward to the 10th of October this year, with smarter training and great advice from your podcast, and adding more stretching and cross training, I completed the very hilly 2010 Portland Marathon in 5 hours and 14 minutes, 45 minutes less than my first one. Friends and family joke, did you win? In my heart, after a 21-year quest and injury, I felt like I was the first person across the finish line. I guess if you never give up on the dream, it will eventually happen. I want you and Trevor to understand that your podcast is really helping out us marathoners of all types. Thanks again and keep running. Keith.
Well, I didn't give up.
That's amazing, because most people would have just thought, I have such bad luck, running a marathon is not in the cards for me. But,
yeah,
you know, he went forward, and I'm sure just the feeling of accomplishing his goal is really wonderful. And now he has the goal of finishing a marathon in under 5 hours, too. So,
yeah. You
know, he's set further goals for himself also.
Well, he might need to stay away from bicycles.
Well, the second injury came while running, so.
Oh, okay.
I guess some people just have all the luck.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and jump into the subject of this podcast episode, barefoot and minimalistic running. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
Running is not necessarily a sport that's given to wild fads and trends, but lately you can't read far in most websites or running magazines without hearing about this topic. Actually, as I was preparing for this podcast, I got the November issue of Runner's World magazine, and one of the featured articles was, Should You Run in Minimalistic Shoes? The Truth Behind the Barefoot Craze. So it was kind of interesting confirmation that this is something that's on the forefront of many runners' minds.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years, a trend has been redeveloping related to the barefoot and minimalistic running issue. In 2009, Christopher McDougall wrote the best-selling book Born to Run. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with that book, McDougall is a journalist, a world traveler, and a runner, and this book is a fascinating look into the world of ultra running, hidden tribes, and his quest to run injury-free. He was told by his doctor that he wasn't built to run and shouldn't continue to attempt it. So McDougall goes on a fantastic journey to find help for himself, basically. He sets off to find a lost tribe in the Copper Canyons of Mexico. This book gives a great history of the ultra-running tribes of running lore, medical evidence that people were designed to run long distances, and brings you in contact with some amazing characters. Now, McDougall talks about what he considers to be the painful truths of modern running shoes. He says, number one, the best shoes are the worst. Runners wearing top-of-the-line shoes are 123% more likely to get injured than runners in cheaper shoes. Number two, he says, feet like a good beating. Balance and vertical impact are closely related. The legs' impact forces are lightest in bare feet and heaviest in well-cushioned shoes. So it's kind of paradoxical, actually. People quoted in this book include Alan Webb, who says, human beings are designed to run without shoes. Another researcher, Dr. Hartman, says, the deconditioned musculature of the foot is the greatest issue leading to injury, and we've allowed our feet to become deconditioned over the past 25 years. Pronation has become this very bad word, but it's just the natural movement of the foot. The foot is supposed to pronate. I must admit that my curiosity with the barefoot and minimalistic running movement was strengthened after reading Born to Run. However, being a natural skeptic, I needed to research the topic myself to find out if it's merely a short-lived fad or a real physiologic breakthrough. Anyone who's ever struggled with a running injury has probably wondered if barefoot or minimalistic running could be the answer for them. So, is this an area where you need to jump on board, or is this a trend to let pass by? Now, as a disclaimer, I have yet to try barefoot running or minimalistic shoes, so I'm approaching this topic without firsthand experience in this area. I want to simply help you take a look at what the research shows and what others have experienced. Now, Trevor, you've been running in some minimalistic shoes for a couple months now.
Yeah, I actually went out and ran in them this morning, and here's what I could say about my experience so far is that they greatly reduced my knee pain, almost pretty much went away. At about mile two, which is not very far into the runs I was doing, my knees would start hurting, and I don't know what was going on, but yeah, these new shoes have really helped that, and they just feel really light on my feet, and you know, I might be a believer. I'm running right now in the Mizuno Elixir 5s.
Okay. Now, you purchased those at a specialty running store after having your foot and gait evaluated, so that's definitely something if you've never tried a different type of shoe or a minimalistic shoe, to not just buy something because it looks cool or someone else has had a good experience with it. You know, it's important to have the right shoe for your foot. Now, there have always been barefoot runners out there, both in the elite running stage and in the general population. However, not much attention was paid to these past accomplishments until the success of Born to Run in 2009. Now, celebrities are being photographed wearing Vibram Five Fingers, and every running blog and magazine has tackled this issue. This topic is certainly hotly debated among barefoot and minimalistic converts and skeptics alike. Dr. Paul Langer, who is a podiatrist and marathoner, looks back to the 1970s, where the belief was started that more cushioning in shoes is better, which then promoted an unnatural gait and caused most people to become heel strikers. Before this time, running shoes were pretty basic and didn't include much cushioning or stability features. Langer cites the fact that 80% of shoe wearers land on their heels, while nearly 100% of runners land on their forefoot while running barefoot. Now, quickly, I'd just like to look at some of the benefits and risks of barefoot and minimalistic running. Three benefits of minimalistic or barefoot running would be, number one, you become more in tune with the running experience and your body. You're basically forced to listen to your body more because you don't have the shoe in the way, ruining the message that your feet are trying to send to the rest of your body. The second benefit is that you can run 3% faster barefoot versus wearing a 12-ounce shoe. So running shoes with, you know, a lot of cushioning and stability features tend to be a lot heavier. So you can actually improve your time if you're wearing a lighter shoe or barefoot. And the third benefit would be that barefoot causes a shorter stride and therefore has less impact on the body. Now, obviously, with benefits come risks, and I'd like to talk about some of the risks here. The first one would be increased risk of foot injury from surface materials like puncture wounds, lacerations, infections, inadvertently stepping on a piece of glass or sharp rock. So there is an increased risk of injury. The second risk would be an increased risk of Achilles tendonitis.
And why is there an increased risk? Could you explain that?
Well, most of the modern shoes that we wear have a lifted heel, and so our Achilles tendon is actually shortened. Now, if you take away that heel and you try walking around barefoot, the Achilles tendon is forced to lengthen and add a running stride to that, and it causes increased impact and stretching on the Achilles tendon. And so some people's Achilles tendons don't adapt very well and it can cause injury or a tear. The third risk factor is a higher risk of injury if the transition is made too quickly. Some people think, okay, throw away the modern running shoes, you know, I'm going to do this barefoot or minimalistic running thing, and they jump into it full force, and something your body's not used to, you can really increase your risk of injury. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Now, the running shoe paradigm is built on the notion that we need to limit impact forces and prevent overpronation. Now, overpronation is thought to put more stress on the joints and possibly increase the risk of injury. However, a 1997 study of lower extremity alignment found that overpronation was not a major risk factor for injury. In addition, a study in 2000 found that foot and ankle movement alone was not a predictor of injury. Now, we all know that humans have engaged in endurance running since the beginning of time, but the modern running shoe was not invented until the 1970s. So for most of human history, runners were either barefoot or wore minimal footwear such as sandals or moccasins, you know, with the smaller heels and little cushioning relative to our modern running shoes.
Well, they also wore minimal clothing, too.
That's true. We may wonder how runners coped with the impact caused by the foot colliding with the ground before the invention of the modern running shoe. Really, the underlying truth is that the human body is more complex than we give it credit for. The fact is that the body alters the foot strike and numerous other mechanisms based on what's on the foot or what ground surface you're going to strike, and that's really quite amazing. Shoes alter how the body adapts and responds to the impact. Now, some people may be thinking, so what's the ultimate goal or benefit to minimalistic running? Running in a minimalistic shoe is a means to an end. The goal is to improve your running form that will hopefully allow you to run efficiently and injury-free throughout life. Truly minimalistic shoes are intended to help you develop your running form by allowing your feet and legs to work the way they were intended to. In other words, the goal is to mimic how you would run if you were barefoot, with a shorter stride, a faster cadence, and a midfoot or forefoot foot strike. Now, as I researched this topic, there were many experts who came down on all sides of this issue, so I'd like to give you a small sampling of what some scientists, coaches, and running experts are saying. Dr. William Jungers, who is an anatomical scientist, stated in the Journal of Nature, quote, although there is no hard proof that running in shoes, especially high-tech or pronation control elevated cushioned heel versions, causes injury, in my view, there's no compelling evidence that it prevents them either. However, there is data that implicates shoes more generally as a plausible source of some types of chronic foot problems. Ian Adamson of Newton Running was asked the following question, how do you feel about barefoot running? And this is his response. He says, I am a believer in barefoot running for several reasons. Number one, it forces good running form and body position. Number two, it strengthens the tissues and structures in your legs and feet. And number three, it makes you more aware of how you run and consequently makes you a better, more efficient runner. He goes on to say, one of the problems with traditional running shoes is that the materials decondition your feet. Consider what happens after you have a cast on your arm or leg after a break. The soft tissues waste, most noticeably seen in the muscle. Constantly enclosing your foot in a rigid shoe is no different. The tissues and eventually the bones lose condition. Walking and running barefoot can arrest and eventually reverse this. In addition, modern running shoes typically have soft material under the foot. This material quickly deforms and takes on a permanent set. The problem here is that the depression in the middle of the shoe can push the metatarsals, or your toe bones, together, compressing the nerves and quite often causing a neuroma, which is a swelling of a nerve from compression or trauma, and then it can sometimes lead to stress fractures. 25% of the nerves and bones in the entire body are in the forefoot, so it makes little sense to talk about and design a shoe around the heel, which has a single joint and very few nerves.
I remember for a long time, even before these shoes really came out, you would always talk about how your feet feel confined in your shoes. When people walk barefoot, their foot structure kind of takes on a new shape, and they even get more dexterity in their feet.
Yeah. In 1995, I went on a missions trip to the country of Papua New Guinea, and I lived in a rural village for the summer. Now, both the native children and adults and the missionary children went barefoot, and their feet were very different from mine, like we're talking about. Really, the human foot was not designed to have all its toes smashed together helplessly in a shoe. And a person who goes barefoot has a very tough and capable foot, which more closely resembles a hand. Your toes spread out. The foot naturally develops more amazing dexterity. The shoes that most people in the developed world wear are highly cushioned and structured, and our feet don't develop the same strength after years of being confined to a shoe.
So everybody had webbed feet almost look like there, huh?
Not webbed, but, you know, it was more, the toes were all spread out, and, you know, they could grip things, they could climb up a tree really easily. It was just amazing.
Can they roll cigarettes with their toes?
No. But if you look at people who have lost function in their arms or don't have arms, oftentimes they develop, you know, amazing skills with their feet, you know, be able to play the piano with their feet, right, brush their teeth with their feet, just do all these sorts of amazing things. So in some ways, we're handicapping ourselves by kind of putting our feet in these rigid, tightly confined quarters all the time.
Yeah, think of high-heeled shoes.
Those are definitely very damaging to more than just the foot.
Was it in China, you know, a couple centuries ago, where they believed it was a thing of beauty for women to have very small feet, so they would wrap the feet of the little girls and confine their toes?
Yeah, I mean, they would try to... They thought a beautiful foot was a tiny foot, and so they'd basically create these club feet for these girls. They would, like, bind their foot in half, kind of over on top of itself. And so
that is horrible.
These poor girls, through the whole life, are basically had these deformed, handicapped feet because of that practice. The next expert is Jason Karp, and he has a PhD in exercise physiology and a minor in kinesiology, and he's a certified USA track and field coach. Here are his thoughts on minimalistic shoes. He says, I've been asked a lot lately about barefoot running in minimalistic shoes. I'm not a big fan. For most people who run, who are also overweight, they're putting themselves at an increased risk by not having shoes with shock-absorbing qualities. We tend to copy what the best runners are doing, but while the Kenyans and Ethiopians grow up running barefoot, Americans do not, so it's not a natural way for us to run like it is for them. People can try it, but they would have to integrate it very slowly and systematically into their running. People tend to forget that running shoes have quite a bit of engineering associated with them that are meant to absorb shock and dissipate forces. So it's not like shoes are bad for us.
That's a good point. I could see that if a person is overweight, they could really hurt their feet, injure their feet, if they just go throw on a pair of Vibram Five Fingers and just run in those every day.
Exactly. I think he makes a good point that if this is something that you want to try, it needs to be incorporated systematically and carefully into your running routine. And so, you know, definitely advocating balance. Susan Paul, who is an exercise physiologist, says, to date, there are no studies indicating that running shoes contribute to injury, or conversely, that barefoot running reduces injury and makes you faster. So she definitely has a more skeptical approach to it. Coach Jenny Hadfield says, it's possible to run barefoot, and some runners who have made the transition report benefits, including improved strength, balance, and economy. That said, our culture is not adapted to living barefoot. In fact, many of us rarely walk around without shoes at all during the day. We've adapted to wearing our support rather than building our support. For these and so many more reasons, it's vital to ease into barefoot anything. Because our feet have adapted to having a specific support system for our arches, even going from a supportive shoe to wearing flip-flops or other shoes without arch support can wreak havoc on your feet and aches and pains in the form of plantar fasciitis. So if you feel like barefoot or minimalistic running is for you, there are some things that you need to know and principles to get you started. The key concepts would be to, number one, listen to your body. If you feel pain, you should stop immediately. Pain is basically your body's way of telling you that you've done enough. So start slowly and listen to your body. The second concept would be to take it slow. The average transition takes a few months to maybe even up to 2 years, depending on what kind of shape you're in.
So you definitely recommend somebody not running in their new minimalistic shoes every run or every day that they go and run.
It's something that you should work up to. I think most experts suggest that you should start by doing one of your shorter runs in the minimalistic shoes. And so just start out once a week, and that may even be too much for your body to handle at first. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what kind of shape you're in, if you're prone to injuries or not, you know, your weight, different things like that play into it. So if one run per week is going well, then you can start slowly increasing it. But it may be several months before you're doing all of your running in the minimalistic type shoe, and may even take longer to transition into barefoot running if that's something that you want to do.
All right, well, it sounds like some good advice to help someone get started who's looking at running barefoot or buying a minimalistic shoe like the Nike Free or the Vibram Five Fingers. Or I gotta admit, those are some pretty cool looking shoes though. That grip, you know, each toe has its own little spot, kind of like wearing a glove on your foot.
Yeah, some people think they're really ugly, and some people think they're really cool looking. So.
Well, they're getting to be more popular now, but I still kind of do a double take every time I see somebody wearing them.
Yeah, I definitely notice it too. So, you know, basically, if you're happily running in your shoes and you're not experiencing injury, then just keep doing what you're doing. You know, if it's not broken, you don't need to fix it. But if you've struggled with chronic injury over the years, barefoot or minimalistic running might be the solution for you. I would definitely try it before giving up the sport of running entirely. You know, however, like I've said, I think there should be a careful and a systematic approach to transitioning away from normal running shoes. It's not really a decision to make lightly or something just to dabble in. You know, I'd encourage you to see this as a process or a journey that needs to be taken one step at a time. So first, you need to have a solid running base built up, and preferably with shoes. You know, next, like we said, start by doing one shorter run per week in the barefoot or minimalistic style while listening to your body. You may need to use the run-walk approach to build up your endurance slowly. And at first, your calves and your feet may be very sore. Once you can comfortably do one shorter run per week in the barefoot or minimalistic style, then you can try gradually adding other days per week. But remember to take the transition slowly and to listen to your body. And if you've never read the book Born to Run by Christopher McDougall, I would definitely recommend that. It's kind of like the why of barefoot and minimalistic running. And if you're interested in the how of it, the book Barefoot Running, How to Run Light and Free by Getting in Touch with the Earth is kind of the nuts and bolts of getting started.
All right, and we will list the titles of those books along with the show notes of this podcast episode over on our blog, marathontrainingacademy.com. So it is time for the Marathon Training Academy Quick Tip, and we have a special guest Quick Tipper with us today, my dad. His name is Sheldon Spencer, and he's going to tell you how to find the right exercise level for your age and body type.
Hi, I have a pretty simple answer for that, and that is for me personally, and I think it works for others, the real measurement is, do you feel better after exercising? So for me, it works best to run every other day, not run every day, and to be moderate in my goals. And it's okay if I feel beat up right after running, but after catching my breath and resting a little bit and stretching, I want to feel better the rest of the day. And if I just feel kind of tired and overdone, then I think I've gone too hard and run a little too far.
So if you feel depleted after your exercise session, whether it's running or any kind of cross training, then you probably did too much. You might have gotten into the pitfall of overtraining. So do you feel pretty good after our little run this morning? Or we went 4 miles and...
Yes, and I must say right after we finished, I was hot, I was sweaty, I was kind of beat right then. But after recuperating and relaxing, I just feel great. So that was an invigorating length of running for me.
Yeah, and how many cups of coffee have you had today?
Oh, we're not counting, are we?
That might be part of the invigorating feeling.
Absolutely. That's a part of my lifestyle. I love that caffeine.
Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Dad, all the way from California and giving us that quick tip.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And if you'd like more information on running and marathon training, you can visit us at marathontrainingacademy.com. And while you're there, you can download a free audio gift called the 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. We want you to remember that you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way.